Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, 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 oh. Wake up. Time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. Gotta change it, yeah. Just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. The world won't get no better if we're just let it be. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it, just you and me. Need a little help, y'all. Yes, I do. Need a little help. Say it, boy. Need some help, y'all. I'll change the world. What it used to be. Can't do it alone.
Can't do it alone.
Need some help, yeah.
Need some help, yeah.
That's right. Wake up, everybody, to MPHU Radio. Listening pages of history, and today we will continue part two, a message to the African community in the U.S. And we are honored to have a special guest with us today, and we're going to do a thing today a little different in terms of our order. What we're going to do is we're fortunate to have a nice young lady from France, who is one of our new members and friends. And we're going to start off, we're going to introduce her, and we're going to let her talk to us about what's going on in France and the kind of work that she is doing as a journalist, as an artist, as a reporter. After we do this interview, then we'll go back to our routine, what's up in community, Black Media Facts, and our theme today is we're going to talk about this whole recent decision as it relates to the U.S. Supreme Court in terms of how they have struck their affirmative action as it relates to universities, and education system. Education system, which race is no longer a matter that they need to consider when you talk about missions. So that's our order for today. Welcome to MPH Radio. And right now, we would like to welcome our friend, our guest today, and I hope I pronounce her name right, Sister Wink. She's from Italy, and she's from France, and she's a journalist, she's an artist, several hats. But what we want her to do today is we want her to introduce herself, and she can tell us a little bit about who she is, and more importantly, what's going on in France? Share with the world. What's going on in that community? So, Sister Wentz, we'd like to welcome you to MPH Radio. And if you can hear your voice, hear my voice, just give us a little introduction in terms of who you are. Okay, Sister Wentz, the mic is yours. Give us an introduction, who you are.
Hello,
yes. You can speak now. Who are? Give us the background, who you are, my sister.
I have the bell in my village. Can you repeat, please?
Yes, you can speak now. Can you tell our people, our listening audience, an introduction of who you are?
I am journalist, author, singer. I am a journalist for SFNewsSeed.us to San Francisco and for Millennium TV in New York, and I am singer writer, and I will create a non-profit.
Excellent. Thank you. Now, my sister, as a journalist and looking at what's going on today, can you give our listening audience what's going on today in France? What's the political climate conditions are going on today in France, particularly as it relates to the young people?
I have a message for France. I can tell that my best politician in France, Ségolène Royal, is the best politician for us. She finds an issue for bringing the calm in France. And I don't like Macron. I don't like Le Pen. I love François Hollande, and Hollande and Ségolène Royal are the best speakers for France, and Ségolène Royal published a book in March for giving love for the French people.
Now, Sister Wentz, what is the relationship between the French people and African people at the present time in France? What's the relation between African people or Black people in France and the French people? How would you describe that relationship?
I know the French people are not tolerant, less and less tolerant. But for example, I am disabled. I have a disability. I am borderline, then the French people are nasty with me, and I am impeached to do my journalism like to US, and my books are viewed, but nobody wants to buy my book.
Okay, you say you have a book you published. What's the name of your book? And talk a little bit about your book. Give us the name of your book and talk a little bit about your book.
My last book talks about my addiction to the drugs, to the alcohol in 2014, but I quitted the alcohol and drugs.
Now, you said something about 1914, that something I guess would be tied to the history of France and the movements in general. As a historian, what can you expect to get from your book for someone who lacks history? If someone lacks history, what do you think they may draw from your book?
I want to tell you in the 2014 about this book. I almost died all days, and I was a victim of overdose this year. Not this year, but in 2014. And I exploded about money.
Now, can you repeat what about the money? You said something about money. What about the money in 2014? Elaborate a little bit more about the money situation.
Already, I did an overdose with a stroke and heart attack, lung attack, and after I wanted to die quickly. Then I bought many addictions like alcohol, Red Bull, cigarettes. I was anorexic. Drugs, and after this suicidal episode, my friend helped me to quit alcohol and drugs.
Now, you said earlier you are a journalist, also an artist. Now, as an artist, what kind of artist are you?
The artist. Point in journalism is to find the stats and facts from doctors another specialist, the scientist, because I am a high intellectual potential and I can reflect myself, but I think many doctors or other specialists are wrong.
Now, in terms of being a native to France, in terms of the political relationship between France and the U.S., how do the people view what's going on in the United States? What is your understanding? What is your understanding of what is taking place in the United States, and how does it impact the behavior and perception or how France see the U.S.? How do the French people see the U.S.?
It's better to U.S. because I am accepted to U.S. because I am a good person. I have a skill, and I will live to New York in three years for until my death.
So that's interesting. When you was in New York, what kind of similarities and differences did you experience as relates to how governments treat their people? What kind of experiences did you observe how the government in the U.S. treat its people versus how the government in France treat its people?
Can you repeat, please? I did not understand.
Yes. Let me repeat. When you were living in New York.
Yes.
How did you view how the people behaved between them and their government? What kind of attitude did you detect? What kind of attitude did the people talk about? Or how they view their government in the U.S. and how the French people view their government in France? Did you notice any difference between how people view their government?
Okay. The difference between the French government and the U.S. is the
yes.
quality of the president.
Repeat that. The quality of what?
Macron is not close to the people. He's very unjust against the drug people, and he's hard. He can't listen the people. Then Biden listens the people. Is cool with the person who takes drugs. It's normal, and he finds the best issues for the people with the people.
Okay, as a woman. What are some of your major concerns living today as you look at this world? What are some of the major concerns that you have as you view what's going on in today's world?
I want to find, I want to see a good woman in power. I am feminist. I want half part of men and half part of women to the parliament, mayoral office, in the world about the leaders. But if a woman is like Marine Le Pen or Leila is a bad politician in Belgium, and I can tell you, a woman can be empowered if she's good.
Okay. Once I would like to ask you if you had a message, an important message that the people
yes.
in the U.S. need to know. If you had an important message to share with the American people, with the so-called American people, and particularly the African community in America, what would you say to them? What would be your special message to the people living in America, and particularly the African community?
I want to promote the LGBT community in politics because I am a lesbian. I want more of disabled people in politics because the more and more disabled people are high intellectual potential, like the borderline people and Asperger.
Okay, now, Sister Wentz, I can ask you to leave information on how can people get your book, how can people purchase your book, and how can people get in contact with you if they want to follow the work that you are doing.
Okay. My book, I will create a book for May 2024 to enjoy against Trump.
And how can they get in contact with you if they're interested in terms of supporting your work or maybe invite you to that country? How can they get in contact with you?
Yes, you can contact me, I can contact you. And I have a project for September in your radio.
All right. So, brothers and sisters, if you are interested in getting in touch with Sister Wentz Guarani, I think your last name, let me spell it to make sure I send the word correctly. So, first name Wentz, WITEM, last name GINDREY. She's a journalist, she's an artist, she's in France, she's doing social justice work. If you have an interest in contacting her and collaborating with her, please contact Missing Page of History at mphradio@yahoo.com, and we will put you in touch with her. My sister, we'd like to thank you for sharing with us your perspective as a woman who lives in France on your outlook of the world, and let's stay in touch. We thank you for your contribution to today's program. Thank you, my sister.
Thank you.
All right, as you can see, Missing Pages of History is trying to fill in our missing pages all over the world. We are friends and allies and socialists who is giving their perspectives and sharing their experiences with us. And we just had with our sister Wynn. She's a journalist. She's an artist. She's also a publisher. And she reached out to us earlier that she would like to basically say hello to our community. We thought we'd give her this opportunity to introduce herself, so we'll be developing this relationship, and particularly in terms of what's going on in France as relates to the African communities in France and African community in general, between France and Africa as a whole. So we'd like to thank this young lady for sharing her, making her contribution to today's program. And I believe we have another brother when we're talking about a message to the African community in the U.S. I think we have another brother, caller 4361. I think it's Brother Mikasa. Brother Mikasa, can you hear my voice? Brother Mikasa.
I hear your voice.
Oh, there he goes. We are very honored to have Brother Mikasa. He's a longtime Pan-Africanist revolutionary organizer for our people. He's one of the icons of the right movement individual who is still living today. He is presently in the motherland, in Ghana, connecting with our people. So, Brother Mikasa, just give us a quick background for those who don't know who you are. You are an icon in some right movement. But from your own perspective, tell us, who is Brother Mikasa?
Brother Mikasa, just a brother that worked in the movement for African people. When I was a young man, I sit in and went where the white folks go and sit at the front, went in the front door and didn't say yes, sir. And then I learned about organizations, how important organization was. We had an organization called SNCC. We had another little organization. The Black Panthers came up. And I was in an organization that started organizations everywhere. Then I found out down the road that we were fighting and black folks fighting together, and I found out that we were all Africans, and Africa's our home. And then when I found out about Africa, I found out Africa was not a jungle. It had big cities and nations and thousands of years of scientific data and built so many great things and just a great people. So I'm Mukasa. I'm just part of African people.
You know, for those who also don't know about the brother history, along with Brother Kwame Ture, Brother Carmichael, they both have popularized the phrase Black Power. Brother Mikasa, from Black Power to Pan-Africanism, you in Ghana. What's going on in Ghana? What's life like back home in Ghana? Talk to the people.
Man, I just see people that look like me all day. I don't hear about nobody getting shot. Ain't nobody getting killed. Ain't no mass murder. Police ain't murdering people in the streets and stuff like that. And that I did notice that foreign companies are over here digging holes all over Africa with big machines looking for diamonds and gold and oil and silver. And now they just found another important mineral, the ones they have to use for electric batteries and electricity. What is that called?
Bauxite. Bauxite for steel. The uranium is
bauxite. What they make aluminum from? That's aluminum products and all the lot of other stuff. But lithium.
I know the matter you're talking about. Okay, all right. We'll come back. Go ahead.
They over here digging holes for thousands of miles around. Thousands of people are in the Congo, down in a place called Congo. And they're down there digging. They got little children out there digging with their hands and digging for lithium. And they're getting it and they're putting it in buckets and they're giving it to these big companies. The companies just give them a dollar after they work out there 15, 17 hours a day. They might get a dollar. And they work all day, and they look for lithium in them, in those rocks and all that kind of stuff. So women carrying hundreds of pounds of weight of rocks, sacks of rocks up and down mountains that they don't dug the holes in. And so at that, on that level, people are struggling. But they, you know, we got everything over here, but the big companies coming from the U.S. and Britain and France, They over here killing people and taking everything. They acting over here just like they act in the United States. These Europeans are who they are everywhere you go.
So sound like you're in a position of near colonialism. You got folks who in position leadership, but they're still not getting and controlling their own resources and making their own decisions of the best interest of the community.
Yeah, Africans got to learn. We Africans in the United States and around the world, we got to learn to do for ourselves. And if we got diamonds, we need to use those diamonds the way we want to use them. If we got gold, if we got gold, we got to use the way we want to use it. Stop being servants to someone else. Stop letting our children go into these stores where these foreigners rob them and give them drugs or sell them all that old no good can or whatever they do to us. But everybody's ripping us off. And if we come together like China has done or like Cuba has done long ago, like they're doing in Eritrea and other places, if we come together as African people, we would never have to ask nobody for nothing. We would have diamonds and gold, and we'd be in charge of it. And we can help our people, but our people are suffering. And the United States and these people, they know the value of what's in Africa, what's in other people's land, and they go in there with armies, and they just continue to make war like they're doing in Russia right today and other places. All they do is make war to make sure that people don't make progress towards schools and lights and gas and water. Like, for example, in Venezuela, they said lights and water and housing are people's human rights. Doctors are your human rights. And that you have a right to a doctor without paying medicine and all that. Daycare is a human right. And this is what nations like Venezuela is doing, where they charge you for all that stuff. So we're being ripped off a thousand different ways. And, good thing about it, we're in the middle of a revolution. People and voices and organizations are rising up. Governments are rising up all over the world saying no to imperialism and no to neocolonialism.
Hey, Brother Mikasa,
so,
what do you say? Okay, finish your point.
Say it again.
Go ahead, brother. Finish your point.
What's the central point? Our central point is that we Africans. Yes.
Yeah, I'll go ask the question in terms of your feelings. Once you got into Ghana and started interacting with the people, did they perceive you as an African, or did they see you as someone, as American, something other than an African? Did they embrace you as an African? And how can we better create the scenario where we can start working together and seeing ourselves as one people, as Africans?
Well, if people in Ghana treat me just like they treat each other and look at me like they look at each other, and those kind of questions never come up. I guess when they look at me, they got something enough to know I'm an African like they're African. That question didn't come up at all. They're acting loving, kind, and wonderful. So I know I'm an African. They know I'm an African. Hey, that's it. And they're wonderful people. And they're building a nation, a great, great nation, big cities, all kinds of stuff all around. Thousands of people on the streets selling stuff and doing everything. They're just a beautiful nation. And I'm out here under a mango tree and big mangoes, looking at a big mango on the wall here, on the tree here, and other trees in the yard, But yeah, we have everything in Africa. And one day the people of the United States can come home to Africa, and everybody, every African in the United States or anywhere in the world, in Africa, anywhere, you have an interest in diamond mines and gold mines. Yeah, a little piece of all the diamonds and gold and oil and silver belong to everybody in the United States, in Brazil, in the Caribbean, all people, dark people, all Africans, that's yours. And we can use that now to solve your problem, but you have to help us unite. We have to unite and not act the way our enemies want us to act negative. Don't listen to the neo-colonialist politicians and drunk preachers with gossip and stuff like that. Don't even listen to them. Listen to people like Malcolm and other revolutionary, Martin King, and other revolutionaries that you can hear, boys you can hear. So that's basically what I want to say, Brother Africa.
Okay, let me. It's a few people on the line want to speak to you. Let me bring in my co-host. They have a question or comment for you. Let me bring in my co-host, Brother Alex. We with Brother MacArthur, civil rights icon. He's over in Ghana, integrating our people, expanding and building Pan-Africanism. Any questions or comments you'd like to make to Brother MacArthur?
Yes, I'd like to again welcome him, to the United States or back to the United States to give us this good information.
Well, I
want to
be welcome back. I would rather welcome you home to Africa.
Well, that's what I want. I want to go there because I believe that, our people need to invest into going to Africa, just like we take trips to the Caribbean or Brazil or as you go to Europe and Asia.
Everybody needs to come home. Every Africa needs to go back to his.
Yes, we need to go back and see what, the Hicks history books have basically left out or either lied about. So we need
to
find our culture.
We need to want to teach our African culture and put in it what we need to be in it.
Yes, we need to, teach our culture that, that we are a proud, honorable people. We don't have to be, with a pants walking down, halfway our legs and all the hair hanging down our backs and different things like that, just to say that we are beautiful people. We are a beautiful people. We started out beautiful.
Absolutely.
And we can end up
beautiful. Africa's got the most beautiful people.
I look at, as they say, TikTok like most people, and once I look at TikTok, it makes you want to come there some kind of bad, just to walk around and see the people, because they're all smiling and look like, they're having a good time or whatever. I know there's poverty and homelessness in every society. I don't care where you go in this world, from the richest city to the poorest city, you're going to find homeless people and poor people. Well, they got there because of circumstance, and most likely that circumstance was colonialism.
Yeah, they robbed and stole our riches. We probably the richest people in the world right now. They still live right now. We got to stop them. We need Russia to help us stop them. We need Cuba. We need Venezuela. We need Africa to unite. Then we can stop it, and then we can solve all the problems that African people have.
Yes, that's what, I was, Mr. Lee was talking earlier before, all the different groups that are in Africa that are, like you said, robbing the resources there. And some of those groups are well as mercenaries, and they're working for companies, all over the globe and different things. And a lot of them, I'm sure, are working on their own personal interests as going in there. And, it started out as, we would say, maybe the off-brand of anthropology, where we're going and we're going to dig up these grave sites and different things like that. And we're going to make robbery here, legal. So, you start, looking in the tombs and start taking things and just start basically, going up and down the road. You see, like they say, bounce is almost all over the ground everywhere and gold. So now, you can, back away the site and just start taking the resources. And make laws that, favor you and going into a country doing so. That's what gets me, is how is it legal for them to, do, I'd say, at least 80% of what they're doing.
They keep it all.
And how can Africa fight that, with laws and stopping these countries? That is my question, is how can Africa or these African countries, get legislation to stop this, or at least make a profit from what they're taking out. So these kids are making more, like you said, than a dollar a day. And if you got any answers on that, I appreciate it.
Well, brother, thank you very much. And Lee, My time is up. I'm getting ready to get in a car to travel.
Okay, brother. We thank
I'm
you for
now.
Shining in. We thank
I'm
you for joining us.
I'm traveling across Africa right now.
All right. Get it, brothers and sisters, I love from Missing Pages of History. Thank you, Brother
yes,
McCaffrey.
Sir.
Thank you.
And they told you me to carry you to hurry home.
Will do. On my way.
All right. All right.
All right. You're listening. I ask you, you're listening to Brother McCaffrey, who is a civil rights icon, did a lot of his work and continue work for our people during the Civil Rights Black Power Movement. He's visiting right now in Ghana, and he was just giving us, a little update perspective on his current visit in Ghana. So what we're doing today is we want to send a message to the African community in the U.S. And the message is that we need to get organized. We need to be conscientized. And we need to do all that we can do to fight for Mother Africa and all her children. And the best way we can do that is by learning our history. This is one of the classes of Missing Pages of History, is to learn our history, because once we know our history, it will give us everything we need to know to move forward and become a free people. So right now, what we're going to do on MPH Radio, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll come back with Sister Susan. She's going to give us some black mini facts. And then we'll have a message to the community. And then we'll open up and discuss our theme for today, which is a message to the African community, part two, where we want to discuss a recent decision that took place by the U.S. Supreme Court as it relates to affirmative action. And we'd like to hear your views and your perspectives. So that's the order of our lineup for today. When we come back, we will do going to give you something to think about and MPH Black Men Facts with Susie. You're listening to the voice of MPH Radio, and this is Missing Pages of History. We'll be right back.
My knees, a lonely place.
That's right. Find your strength in the people, the almighty organized people. We welcome you back to MPH Radio. We were just in France and Ghana, speaking to our sister Wince and our brother Mikasa. Give now perspective on that side of the world as MPH connect with you in Africa, because our people is global. And the information received must be global because our problem is global. Our base is our home, Africa. Welcome back to the Voice of MPH Radio. Like always on MPH Radio, we got to give you something to think about. And right now, like always, we want you to think about this concept of freedom. Freedom is something that often thought about. Millions have died of it, and millions will continue to die of it. It would be wise to a wise man to understand what freedom is if he's going to give his life to it. So what we would like to say today, give you something to think about as we talk about this concept of freedom is, what is freedom? We'd have to give you this idea of freedom. Freedom is having the ability and the means to control those necessities for life. If we can do those things, we can be free. What do you think about that concept? Think about that. Feel free to dial in later on and give us your point of view on your concept of freedom by dialing 818-337-0016. But at this point in time, we will continue to move forward by bringing in our sister Susie, and she can share with you today some MPH Black benefits. We'd like to welcome Sister Susie to MPH Radio. Welcome, Sister Susie, to MPH Radio.
Good evening. I'll be bringing a few mini facts, excuse me, from the PRSP calendar of 2021 on this day of Saturday, June the 15th, 2013. It's dealing with leadership today. No matter your age, gender, sexual orientation, or socioeconomic background, know that you have the power to make a difference. Your voice matters, and chances are there are thousands, if not millions, of people around the globe that feel the same way you do. And this is quote from Ella Baker. Ella Baker, 1903-1986, was a true warrior in the struggle for African liberation, dedicating 50 years of her life of political activism. She was one of the key persons in the formation of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, SNCC, which, while many of her elder leaders wanted to control the direction of youth organizations, she urged youth to organize themselves, stating that, quote, people have to be made to understand that they cannot look for salvation anywhere but to themselves, end of quote. And the next individual I'd like to give a mini fact is from France Fanon, 1925-1961, was a psychoanalyst and social philosopher known for his writings on behalf of the national liberation of colonial people. He was educated in France in medicine and psychiatry at the University of Lyon. In 1953 to 1956, he served as the head psychiatry department of Blida Joinville Hospital in Algeria. Being a French colony, he began organizing with the Algerian Liberation Movement, the National Liberation Front, the FLN. His seminal work, The Wretched of the Earth, published shortly after his death in 1961, established him as a leading intellectual in the international decolonization movement. I've just given you just a couple of many leaders for the Black Mini Facts for July the 15th, 2023.
We'd like to thank you, Susie, for sharing your Black Mini Facts with our listening audience today. Of course, when we talk about African leadership, we can't leave out our brother Frank Fanon and our sister Ella Baker. They will live forever in the hearts and minds of our people. for the contribution that they have made towards our liberation. So at this point in time, like always, we'd like to speak directly to the community. We have Brother Alex, who has a message to the community. We're going to bring him in right now. And Brother Alex, what is your message to the community for today's program?
Well, again, Lee, I want to thank you for bringing in our distinguished guest earlier. And just makes a difference, this show does, you know, just to listen to and bring the audience in, because we don't get this anywhere else. So for the people in the Richmond area and wherever you're listening from, Mr. Lee and Susie, you're doing a great job, and just continue to do the work. It's just awesome. But for the past few weeks, I have been trying to make sense out of no sense. If I asked you to follow me down a rabbit hole, would you go? That is where the equality and justice of this country seems to be going in the wrong direction. The U.S. Supreme Court has been making some highly questionable and controversial decisions since Donald Trump's nomination and his Senate confirmation of three Republican-influenced justices who claimed to be neutral. They have now joined with the three conservative justices and are now overturning prior decisions of past courts. To say the least, they have not considered why the laws were instated to begin with, or how for once the law gave some people a chance to right century-old wrong committed by the country's privileged. There were two cases that didn't make sense before and were rejected in 2013 and 2016, where two white defendants and the conservative activist Edward Blum made arguments in the lower courts, lost, appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court, and lost again to the opinions that affirmative action in higher education was unfair. Mr. Blum's unjust efforts to overturn a policy that had benefited many African Americans, Asians, and Indians would go unnoticed by the new appointed justices. Minorities have been shut out by the most elite institutions in America for centuries, not because of grades, but because of privilege and legacy. After losing the first case using white defendants, Mr. Blum decided to exploit the Asian Americans against the other minorities. It was a deliberate and appalling change of strategy used to uphold the idea that affirmative action was discriminatory against any minorities. It was a conscious appeal to the far-right conservatives to advance their points that affirmative action was no longer needed. Of this case, writer and activist Jeff Chang said Asians were standing in proxy for white students. Mr. Chain argued that this case used both real issues and false narratives. Let me say that again. False narratives to end policies that helped diversify college campuses and pit Asian Americans against the other people of color. No one had ever made a challenge to the court more erroneous than this case, but because the U.S. Supreme Court has shifted in power, they do as they please instead of doing right by the law. The beginning of legacy started with the first public school named the Boston Latin School, and it's the oldest existing school in the United States. It was started in 1635 to accommodate the young white males of well-to-do families in the Boston area. There could be no women, poor or middle-class whites, indentured servants, free Negroes, slaves, or Indians attending. They considered them the low class of citizens, and they were taught at home. The white elite thought it was a waste of time to teach them about laws, math, science, or politics. The planter or business owners did not support public education, but arranged for private tutors of their children and sent others to England or Europe to the fine institutions there. During the late 1600s and 1800s, more than 80% of males and 50% of females were fully literate or unable to read and signed their names. Harvard College was started in 1636, and it was founded by the colonial legislature with the same intentions of the privileged class only. Many other private colleges were founded with these same guidelines, but added legacy as a way to get even with less than average grades. They began to be called the schools of the rich and prominent, and many of America's leaders came from them. Some graduated and some did not. But just going there meant you were better than the common man. In 1795, the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, opened its doors as the first true public state constituted public university for the common white man in America. It did not have a legacy component in its mission standards and accepted any who could afford the university cost. The freedom to go to college was just beginning, but still women, the poor, whites, Indians, free, and enslaved people could not attend unless approved by a man of wealth and privilege. The elites of this country of all races have practiced a separation of classes at all private schools, colleges, and universities, to make sure their children have the best jobs and lifestyles available so they can associate with the common people as less as possible. The idea of superiority and elitism has maintained the status quo of this country since its founding. Something had to give, and in 1960, an affirmative action was set to challenge legacy and privilege. It broke the bond of we only want our kind of people to go here. Affirmative action involves a set of policies and practices with a government or organization seeking to include particular groups that were historically discriminated against based on their gender, race, sexuality, creed, or nationality in areas which such groups are underrepresented, such as education and employment. Historically, and internationally, support for affirmative action has sought to achieve goals such as bridging inequalities in employment and pay, increasing access to education, promoting diversity, and redressing wrongs, harms, or hindrances. Some countries use a quota system, which in turn reserves a certain percentage of jobs, political positions, and education allotments for minorities. Others have a special preference or consideration for minority groups who have been targeted in the past. Even the use of integration has been used to offset the wrongs of the privileged who thought they were better than the common citizens. The term affirmative action was first used in the laws of the United States in Executive Order 10925. Signed by President John F. Kennedy on March 6, 1961. This order included a provision that government contractors take affirmative action to ensure that applicants are employed and employees are treated fairly during employment without regard to race, creed, color, or national origin. It was used to promote actions that achieve non-discrimination. Affirmative action is intended to promote the opportunities of the defined minority groups within a society to give them equal access to that of the majority population. It is often instituted for government and education settings to ensure that certain designated groups within a society are able to participate and all provided opportunities, including promotional, educational, and training opportunities. Its justification is to help compensate for past discrimination, persecution, or exploitation by the ruling class of culture and to address existing discrimination. Affirmative action has helped African Americans, Hispanics, Asians, American Indians, other minorities, and women to achieve goals they could not attain any other way. In 1983, The Washington Post, The New York Times, and Newsweek quoted Clarence Thomas, then head of the EEOC, saying in his own words, "God only knows where I would be today if not for the legal principles of equal employment opportunities, measures such as affirmative action that are critical to minorities and women in this society. These laws and their proper application are all that stand between the first 17 years of my life and the second 17 years of my life. To sell out his own race and reverse his trail of thought has not come as a high price for Justice Thomas, as affirmative action paved the way for him to be on the Supreme Court. And Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson went forth as Justice Thomas humiliated himself in front of America and the world once again by being a Sambo to white conservative opinions. America today is a racist, or even more than it was when it was formed. It continues to hold on to many forms of inequality and financial bondage. Gerrymandering and the disenfranchising of voting in many areas are widespread across this country. The law enforcement community is still not being held, and senseless deaths of black citizens by the abuses of excessive force to detain and arrest. Education budgets are reallocated by states at city and county levels to support private and charter schools over public schools with higher enrollments of black students. Housing discrimination, job discrimination, lawsuits are still being challenged in the court system. Black cemeteries are being paved over, destroyed, or moved to make way for renewal. Thousands of books complaining black history and culture are being removed from classrooms, schools, libraries, universities because they contain the truth about how life was and is in America and how blacks are treated as second-class citizens. Knowledge is power, and the privileged and powerful have never wanted the black citizen to become independent in thought or financial resources. Blacks have few resources to stand on their own to achieve financial success. The U.S. Supreme Court has rarely supported the Negro citizens since its beginning. Why do we expect for it to be fair now? Why does it take more laws to make simple freedoms available to the Negro? It is because of the words spoken by Chief Justice Robert Tanley in 1857 about the Dred Scott decision, which is considered the worst ever by a Supreme Court, that African Americans had for more than a century before been regarded as beings of inferior order and altogether unfit to associate with the white race, either in social or public relations, and so far inferior that they have no rights which the white man was bound to respect, and that the Negro must justify and lawfully be reduced to slavery for his benefit. He was bought and sold and treated as an ordinary article or merchandise and traffic, whatever profit could be made by it. But to all my people who are not Sambos, Uncle Toms, or far-right black conservatives, I give you Frederick Douglass' response to that dark day for the African-American, as one of our own color has once again sold us down the river of justice in America like Booker T. Washington. We are now told in tones of lofty civilization that the day is not lost, all lost, and that we might as well give up the struggle. The highest authority has spoken. The voice of the Supreme Court has gone over ways of the national conscience, saying, peace, be still. The Supreme Court of the United States is not the only power in this world. It is very great, but the Supreme Court of the Almighty is greater. In the eyes of God, America once again turns its back on the very Negro citizens who built her great wealth and image. How much longer can we cry, God bless America, when America looks the other way? And I thank you, family.
You were just listening to Brother Alex Joyner, who's giving his message to the community. And today's theme is part two, a message to the African community in the U.S. We will continue the discussion of our affirmative action, I ask you to pay attention to this recent article that was written by Insider.com, titled "Ketanji Brown Jackson Accuses Clarence Thomas of Having an Obsession with Race Consciousness and Relying on Many More Straw Men Than Can Be Listed in His Affirmative Action Opinion." We will continue the discussion when we come back from our station break, a message with the music, and we would like to invite you, the listening audience, to call in and share your thoughts on this recent decision of on affirmative action not being allowed to be considered as we talk about race, as we deal with this question of mission at universities and colleges. We'll be right back. This is MPH Radio.
If you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? How long have you hated your white teacher? Who told you you love your black preacher? Do you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? People must prove to the people a better day is coming for you and for me. With just a little bit more education and love for our nation would make a better society. Now some of us would rather cuss and make a fuss than to bring about a little trust. But we shall overcome, I believe, someday, if you'll only listen to what I have to say. And how long have you held your white teacher? Who told you you love your black preacher? Can you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? I say now people must prove to the people a better day is coming for you and for me. With just a little bit more education and love for our nation would make a better society. And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? If you had a
choice of choosing right versus wrong, which one would you choose? Yes, welcome back to the MPH Radio. It's Brother Alex's commentary. We will continue the discussion on affirmative action as we ask you to direct your attention to a recent article from Insider.com titled "Ketanji Brown Jackson Accuses Clarence Thomas of Having an Obsession with Race Consciousness and Relying on Many More Straw Men Than Can Be Listed in the Affirmative Action Opinion." They're really interesting when you look at the Supreme Court makeup and how you have two African individuals on the court and they pit each other against each other again. But that story sounds familiar. Now, one of the things in this article, they talk about the Supreme Court struck down affirmative action in college admission in a 6-3 decision. The court, two black justices sharply criticized each other's arguments in their opinion. Ketanji Brown Jackson said Clarence Thomas' opinion showed an obsession with race consciousness. Everybody else has race consciousness. That's interesting. The United States Supreme Court struck down affirmative action in college admission in a 6-3 decision, blocking higher educational institutions from considering race in admission decisions. I find that case, that decision, to be really interesting. We'd like to have your perspectives by calling in at 818-337-0016. Brother Alex and Susie and listening audience, when we look at this question, the 9 affirmative action no longer being used as a criteria to consider admission in colleges and universities. And we say that when we talk about a message to the African community, what message are they sending to the African community and the rest of the communities? Because there are many messages in this message. For one, I project that with this decision, they're also going to encourage businesses to no longer see race as a factor of having people. Also, it will encourage businesses and people to act in a manner where African people are even less likely to be more respected. It's a symbolism where they send it out to the rest of the world and those in the U.S. that, you know, again, there are no rights that are European bound to respect in this country or in this world when it comes to African people. I believe that was by Judge Tunis back in the late 1900s. So, Brother Alex, we'll start with you again. Then we'll go with Susan. We'll open up our line. What message does this send to the African community and the rest of the world? That's saying affirmative actions can no longer need to be used as a criteria for admissions when it comes to universities and colleges. Brother Alex.
Again, thank you, Mr. Lee. As I read earlier, we have to realize that when we're talking about the elite universities, because that's where it was brought up at. You know, Chapel Hill being the first, Harvard being the first. You know, you're hitting the two most prestigious universities that started in the country. So, and they were started with the thought that only the white privilege would ever go there. And they never thought that any African Americans actually would go there, Native Americans, Asians, or anything else, because they didn't consider them being within our kind of people. So you got about 10 or 15% that make a join today, got a little money, got a little privilege, got good grades, know somebody, you come on campus. As we know, legacy is almost at 60 to 70% of all these Ivy League schools and at the top state schools, because if you know somebody, you can get in. Even to say that, I hate to say it, but, you know, if you know who to talk to, because I put 4 kids in college, and if you know who to go to, and not because of grades, because all my kids, I did extremely well and graduated with more than 2 degrees each. So they would have been accepted anywhere regardless what. But if I wanted them to actually go somewhere else, it would have been acceptable. So we could have basically, you know, like it's being broken every day. Rules are broken for those and legacy, the privilege, who want their kids to have that better opportunity, to have better jobs, to have better lifestyle. All parents want their children to succeed, you know, regardless what. But you want an even playing field, which I understand. So you have kids that are going to school here, and when we were talking about Harvard and Yale and Columbia, Brown, you're not walking in there as African-American with a 2.5. Okay, you're not going in at a 3.0 or 3.2. The people that go there have already shown that they need to go there. They just ain't got the money to go there. So if you look at the statistics of the African-Americans that do attend these Ivy League schools or the better schools, then you find out that their GPA is about 3.8 or better. So the kids are proving themselves without a doubt. But the problem is you're not wanted, plain and simple. You are not wanted. You're a minority. You're not wanted. Now, they had to go and get another minority who was willing to overstep another minority and say that, hey, I belong here and he don't belong here. Because, see, they're not going to percentage away where they'll give you 5% more to allow to go to school there. So then that means you got to fight amongst your own minorities. So if we only allow 10% in here or 15% in here, you 15 cents got to fight amongst each other because we're not opening up the door to anybody else. And that is what has happened. We haven't seen where Harvard or any of these schools say, oh, you know something? We're going to roll it back so that we're going to admit another 5, 10, 15%. And if they did that, then we wouldn't even have this case presented against the court because the lower courts all threw it out. But because we have a court that's sympathized with the privilege and wealth now, this is the decision we had. And it took someone to sell this nation out. And it's hard to believe that minorities sold themselves out. And I would like to hear the other comments today because I could go on and on and on because the dissent that Ms. Jackson wrote is just awesome. I mean, if you can really get a chance to download it or just read it online. She stirred some things up, but we only saw points here, points there. But she really took it to the woodshed on Clarence Thomas. And there's no telling what was said back in chambers or whatever, because here's someone that had benefited from it and now chose to close the door on someone else. But this is just a start. So you have to start somewhere. So this is just the start. Now, also in business and other housing discrimination and everything else. The door has been cracked now. And with the door being cracked, we have to be careful that it's going to be kicked wide open. And then a lot of these laws will be reversed. Even in interracial marriage, as Mr. Thomas said, that ain't even sacred anymore. So, I mean, I don't understand that one by him. But there are so many things that he said could be looked at, could be overturned. 13th, 14th, 15th Amendment. They're not written in stone. They can be reversed. So all the advantages, all the acts that have been passed, all the executive orders can be overturned. And if we don't go out there to the voting box and start voting for the people who have your best interest in heart, then we will have the worst community. If we think our community is bad with drugs and everything now, we will be in the worst shape, just like our ancestors were, with no windows, no doors, no running water, no stoves, no lights. We will be back with them. Because basically that's where they want to take us back to. So there will be hard-leaning laws for us to get along, except for the ones that
want to be in that type of lifestyle. And believe me, there were plenty African Americans who did not mind working in the plantation house. And it was the ones in the field that knew it was wrong. But because the ones that were working in the house were getting just a little bit better, then they turned their backs on the ones in the field. And they would sell them out in a second. And then the ones in the field saw that they were getting a little cooperation up there, and they began to sell each other out in the field. So we have to look at that, you know, as our own politicians, as they began to sell us down the river also. So this thing goes into a lot of different things. You know, this don't think that it's just about college. This is about your whole life and what's going to happen to our children. So I'm turning it back to you, Lee, and let me hear these comments, because I know some people should be riled up about this one. And take care.
All right, next we hit Susan's comment on the affirmative action decision. Susan, your comment.
Okay. My comment is, one thing when you think about it is you're erasing a whole lot of decades of progress. Then, two, in the racial and ethnic health disparity that it's going to create, basically you're talking about systematic racism in our nation, which continues to result in the health of poor people, the outcomes. And on top of it, one good thing out of this is that HBCUs are considering changing some of their admission practices because of the Supreme Court's decision. And it's also a shame that this has shaken higher education, because it dismantles the total to some schools that some schools had to use to increase diversity. You might as well say diversity is just, it's gone, and it'll probably never come back because of this decision that the Supreme Court made. And also, HBCUs is going to affect their resources. We already have a smaller percentage of most of your higher educated institutions. So now it's just hitting, it's going to hit the HBCUs in every direction. And that's my opinion.
Thank you, Susan. Let's go to caller 4298. Caller 4298, your opinion on the impact and what it means to you on this Supreme Court decision on affirmative action. Caller 4298.
Thank you, Brother Lee. Thank you. My name is Robert Andrew Moses, and I bear witness that there's one God, Jesus, who is the author and finisher of my faith, and that mouth, faith, tongue is his messenger for government. So having said that, the question is one of scientific socialism. The question is one of the correct path versus the incorrect path. And we see a situation here where the class struggle has broken out within the Supreme Court. One has divided into two, and that the left with Justice Brown versus the right with Justice Thomas. And the question is the correct path versus the incorrect path. And certainly she laid out her position clearly. And so once you get understanding, you have to make a decision on which side you're on. And these issues will be, we're learning lessons now. The working class is learning lessons each day. We're learning, but the unions out in on strike the writers unions and the actors unions, we're learning every day. UPS on strike, we're learning it. And sooner or later, this situation will come to a head, and we will be organized as one mass party of a working class that's looking out for its own interest, that is, its own affirmative action program, a proactive program of how we're going to solve these injustices we face. And I'll leave it right there. Thank you.
Thank you, caller 4298. You know, as we talk about a message to the African community in the U.S., as well as throughout the world, I'd just like to give people something to think about, and that is that, you know, they once told me that in law school they teach this concept of if they can define you, they can own you. if they can define you or claim you, they can own you. And when we want to talk about the question of truth and what is correct, is the truth something based upon subjectivity, where it can be true today and incorrect tomorrow? There's really no such thing as truth. It's based upon my interpretation of it. And if that's, it is so, where does that leave you? Yes, there's a warning that has been sent to the rest of the world, and particularly to the African community in the U.S. and around the world, is that all of these so-called gains we claim or think we won, they all may be taken back from you in reverse. And if that is the case, then the question becomes, did you ever really own it at the beginning? Those are some of the questions issues I have that I like to get a collective response from our people. So when we move forward, we know what's ours is ours, and we must be in a position to protect it at all times. Freedom is not something that you once gained and you stop fighting for it. You must continue to fight for freedom to keep it. And I think this is the message that we need to receive and understand when we look at this question of affirmative action. I'll come back to you, Brother Alex. I'd like to hear your response to that and your final thoughts for today's program. Brother Alex.
Well, thank you again, Ms. Lee. Like I said, I not appreciate today's show again, just like so many others, because, you know, we're hitting on issues that our community need to be talking about. This is not something we need to shut up and stay in the house and hold our heads down or cross the other side of the street just avoid talking about it. This is something that we need to discuss with our community. And like Susie said, yes, HBCUs are going to get quite a few more students. But I wonder if that's a double-edged sword, because right now most of them can't handle any more students because of the infrastructure. So if they're not getting money from Congress, U.S. Congress, or from their state legislator, and the alumni is not giving back, and they cannot raise money for the infrastructure they need in new dorms and new classrooms and hire professors and staff to manage these universities, they're overloaded. Now, will they take these top-tier students? Because remember now, the ones that they're closing the door on, these are not dummies. These are smart students. And they're going to wind their way probably to most of the European American colleges, the major colleges in Division I, Division II, before they look down at HBCU. So it's going to be a trickle-down effect. It is not going to be the resurgence that a lot of HBCUs think there may be. But they should go after them and recruit them anyway and present them. They need to work on their websites and offer more trips to campus, more visits and everything, and show the sponsorship of what the culture is to go to that university. And you can find out about the legacy at these HBCUs. So there to consider as far as affirmative action is concerned, as far as our children getting a proper education. Because every college and every university, it is not fit for each individual. So a lot of us get lucky when we go to colleges and find a university that fits, from the professors to the students to the curriculum to everything that's involved. It takes a lot out of the individual to dedicate himself to go those 4 years and go extra years for the master's and for the doctorate program. So that's a huge commitment and is a financial burden for most. And having the other law overturned about being able to pay some of that college debt off, that's going to add into another realm of where you may go. So we need to look at our HBCUs and especially alumni and start giving back. If we look across the board, not only Ivy League, Division One, or whatever, there are schools that the parents and the students continue to give many years later just to make sure that that university stays solvent, that the football program, the basketball program, whatever, that they give hundreds of thousands of dollars and even millions of dollars. Now, we have a few athletes who have already stepped up, like Charles Barkley, willing to give to minority students. We have two or three black billionaires and millionaires who have given money and to the support and paying off college loans. So this is what we have to look at. You know, it's going to be a new future out here in black business and everything. Because this, like I said, this is the beginning of the door being, and it's going to be a rush of laws being challenged and overturned so that it only favors one side. It won't favor everybody. It will only favor one side because the United States, for some reason, wants to return back to before 1950. And with that type of mindset to return before 1950, when somebody, some fool thought that that was when America was his greatest, then we're in trouble. And that's what it's truly all about. We can't go back to before 1950. We're supposed to be on the road to progress, not regress. But there are so many Americans who believe that that is the way to go, that they've been pushed around by affirmative action, and they're tired of seeing other people get a job when they feel like they should have the job. But we have to look at qualifications also. And just like like I said about the qualifications going into Ivy League schools, these are not dummies that are going to these schools. Being hired on the job, you're not a dummy coming in there. They're just not hiring you because of they're also looking at your skills. So they may be choosing the best of the best also. See, we have to look at it as a two-edged sword. So when five black kids may apply, but they only give it to the guy that's 4.2 or 4.3 or 4.4 or 4.5, that's the one that gets in. The guy that does a 3.6 or 3.8, he don't make it, or girl, they don't make it. So the same way on the job. The guy that doesn't have the experience versus the guy that has the experience, out of the black applicants, because there's going to be more than one, or minority applicants, that's who gets the job. Now, the only difference is if they have to have a certain amount of women. It's called it as a quota. You know, there have to be a certain amount of women. So, and that is fair because women were left out of the workplace and women were left out of voting. So what the laws were doing were made to catch up with a system that was wrong for hundreds of years. So we don't want to go back to where women couldn't vote. You're already taking away reproduction rights, but we don't want to go back to the way it used to be. And we have to be careful. And I thank you again, and I turn it over to anyone else who wants to comment.
We'd like to thank Alex, Susan, our listening audience, and our special guest today, our sister from France, our sister Vince, and our brother Mikasa out of Ghana, Africa, for their contribution to part two, a message to African community in the U.S. In closing out on this topic of affirmative action, we'll leave you with this thought. How many times we will continue to fight to go one step forward and then take two steps back and continue to give us the illusion of inclusion, the illusion of progress. If we truly want freedom, again, we must look forward and go forward. And the only way we can do that is to look at Africa, go home. Africa must be the foundation in which we no longer have to play the game to be played so other people will be getting paid. Think about that. Until next time on the 29th of July, our next program at 1 p.m., we encourage you to continue to move forward ever and backwards double. Now continue to support us and help us fill in our missing pages of history. For those who might be in the region of the Richmond metropolitan area of the state of Virginia, again, we share with you that you can catch our TV program on Comcast Cablevision on Channel 95 and on Verizon Cable Company on Channel 36. That's 11 p.m. and 1 p.m. You can support both programs. And there are programs that's geared towards enlightening, educating you about your world, your history, and your culture. You can support MPH Radio by making a general donation to Zelle, Missing Pages of History 1@yahoo.com. Or if you need another method of making a contribution, please email us at mphradio@yahoo.com and we will tell you how. So until next time, again, we'd like to thank everyone who participated on this program and come and join us as we continue to move forward by filling in our missing pages of history. We see you on the 29th of July. This is Voice of MPH.
You'll find some time to know where you are, but not where you want to be. Just take your time, really pace yourself, have a little bit of faith in you. You'll find, you know, and then you don't. You'll find that you feel it, and then you don't. It's only the beginning. Please don't sweat it. It's only the beginning. For meaning my brother, yeah. Just set the best for the rest to follow. Shine on, shine on. You find some time, you know where you are, but know where you wanna be. Just take your time, embrace yourself, have a little bit of faith.
Come on. here, we are here. Bombs over Baghdad, trying to get something we never had. Let's start with a good dad. So real, but it's so sad. And while we burning this incense, we gon' pray for the innocent. Cause right now it don't make sense. Right now it don't make sense. Let's talk about Chi-Town. Let's talk about Gaza. Let's talk about Israel. Right now with Israel. Let's talk Nigeria in the mass hysteria. Yeah, our souls are brought together so that we could love each other, brother. We are here. We are here for all of us. Save the nation with no support for education. Cause right now it don't make sense. Right now it don't make sense. Let's talk about our part. My heart touch your heart. Let's talk about living. Had enough of dying. That's what we all about. Let's do more giving. Do more forgiving. Yeah. Our souls are brought together so that we could love each other. Sisters, we are here. We are here for all of us. We are here for all of us. It's why we are here. Why we are here. We are here. We are here for all of us. We are here for all of us.
While we are here, while we are here.